I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear how the healthcare for hundreds of thousands of Coloradoans is in the balance in a Texas court today. Oral arguments will be heard this morning in a case that aims to strike down the Affordable Care Act. Now, Colorado is one of the states that is defending the ACA in this lawsuit. We'll hear what's at stake after headlines. Then the inaugural Boulder Environmental Nature Outdoors Film Festival begins tomorrow. It runs through July 13th at the Dairy Arts Centre. We'll hear from the creator of the festival. A brief comment line will take us to the bottom of the hour. And then we go back to BBC for headlines, followed by science. Today on How on Earth, we'll hear about the new science of athletic performance that is revolutionising sports. That's the new book by Dr. Mark Bubbs, and he'll join us to speak about peak health, nutrition, recovery and mindset. At 9 o'clock, it is the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. A petition to seek the recall of Governor Jared Polis was submitted to the Secretary of State on Monday. The petition was submitted by the group Dismiss Polis, 6 months to the day from when Governor Polis was sworn into office. Colorado Politics reports that a second recall targeting state Democratic Senator Brittany Peterson of Lakewood could be underway by the end of the week. Once the petitions are approved by the Secretary of State, recall backers will then have 60 days to gather the required number of signatures. In the case of the Polis recall, more than 630,000 valid signatures will need to be submitted. The recall against Peterson will need more than 18,300 signatures. Several Democrats have been the target of recall efforts over legislation that was passed in the most recent session, including the Red Flag Bill, which aims to have a judge order the removal of guns temporarily from people deemed a danger to themselves and others, as well as the legislation that overhauls oil and gas regulation in the state. Last month, a recall effort targeting Tom Sullivan, a Democrat from Centennial, abandoned its campaign. Sullivan ran on a gun control platform. He's the father of Alex Sullivan, who was murdered in the Aurora Theatre shooting. State employees in Colorado are dealing with declining contributions to their pension fund. Sarah Dalgleish has more.
In 2011, Colorado state workers took a 2.5% pay cut to bolster the state's pension plan in the midst of the Great Recession. Almost 10 years later, state employees are facing the 2.5% pay cut again, even though Colorado is in a period of economic expansion. The cut comes in the form of higher para contributions, which is accompanied by a reduction in future retirement benefits for Colorado public workers. Currently, most government agencies contribute 20.4% of employee pay to PARA, double what it was in 2005. Most of that money is going towards paying current retirees, leaving less for wages and for retirement benefits for those in the future. PARA used to be a recruiting factor for the public sector. However, economic expansion in the private sector, accompanied by these continued pay cuts and shrinking pension, has caused many public workers to move to higher-paying jobs in the private sector. This trend has left public agencies understaffed. In June 2018, 1 in 5 state jobs was vacant in Colorado, and the lack of employees increases the burden on those who remain. With PARA finances still unstable, policymakers have adopted a wait-and-see approach to making improvements. Potential future solutions could involve major PARA policy revisions or adjusting employees' retirement pay based on changes in the cost of living. For KGNU, I'm Sarah Dalgleish.
A state district judge has dismissed a lawsuit that was brought by car dealers over vehicle emissions standards in Colorado. The suit had been brought by the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association, and it argued that tougher statewide vehicle fuel standards are unlawful and should be tossed out. The Denver Post reports that the Denver District Judge Martin Egelhoff wrote in a decision that was released yesterday that the Dealers Association didn't have legal standing to challenge the rule. That means it didn't show that the rule would harm its legally protected interests. Last November, the Colorado Air Quality Control Commission approved a rule to boost the fuel efficiency standard for cars that were sold in the state. And that means that starting in 2020, brand new lightweight and medium vehicles will have to get roughly 39 miles to the gallon. The car dealers had argued that the new standards will drive up the price of vehicles for dealers and buyers. And in related news, Colorado Governor Jared Polis today joined 22 other U.S. governors in signing a pledge backing California legislators in their challenge to the Trump administration's plans to relax federal vehicle mileage standards. The Associated Press reports that the pledge by the governors, who are nearly all Democrats, comes as the Trump administration is moving to freeze tougher mileage standards that had been laid out by former President Barack Obama as part of his plan to tackle climate change. And in today's weather, warm and sunny conditions around the Front Range today. Expect highs in the mid to upper 80s, similar temperatures and conditions on Wednesday. Even warmer on Thursday, highs getting into the low 90s with a chance of afternoon thunderstorms. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Oral arguments will be heard today in a Texas court in a lawsuit that's been brought by Texas and 19 other Republican-led states in an effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They argue that without the penalty for the individual mandate, which had been repealed through the Republican tax bill in 2017, the entire ACA should be struck down. Well, Colorado is one of the states that requested to intervene to defend the Affordable Care Act. The state became a defendant in the case after the Trump administration Department of Justice refused to defend the law, even though it is constitutionally supposed to do so. Adam Fox is the director of strategic engagement of the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative, and he says that the lawsuit is irresponsible and it takes us one step closer to stripping healthcare from more than 600,000 Coloradoans who rely on the Affordable Care Act.
Essentially, the argument that is being made by the plaintiffs in this case is that without the individual mandate penalty, the rest of the ACA cannot function, and that there is essentially harm inflicted on these Republican states in the process. But the irony of all of that is that we're seeing the individual market stabilize right now. The ACA continues to function without the individual mandate penalty, and the reality really doesn't reflect their argument.
Well, that individual mandate was so central, really, to the arguments put forward in favor of the Affordable Care Act when it was, you know, being put forward in the first place. So why do you think that the market has stabilized despite that stripping back of that penalty for not having health insurance?
I think it fundamentally comes down to the fact that people want to have health coverage if they can afford it. And the Affordable Care Act is helping many individuals be able to afford coverage. Even without that individual mandate penalty. I don't think we ever really thought that the individual mandate penalty was substantial enough to be a substantial motivating factor for people. But I think we're seeing, especially without it, that people still want to have health coverage if they can access it.
And so the component there is they need to have places where they can access it, and one of those places being the health insurance exchange.
Exactly, and the financial assistance that helps them afford it.
Well, what is the reality right now in terms of the Affordable Care Act? Because I think there is a misconception out there that the entire thing doesn't exist anymore, but that's obviously not the case. What is the current status of the ACA?
In general, the ACA continues to exist and continues to function rather well in most states. I think there are some challenges in some areas where there's only one insurance company that's offering coverage through the individual marketplace. But in general, the markets have been stabilizing. We're seeing much smaller or more moderate premium increases each year, and in some cases, some decreases. And there's still millions of people who are gaining coverage because of the Affordable Care Act.
Is there a sense of how many people, say, in Colorado are still using the healthcare exchange to get those individual health insurance policies?
So in Colorado, we have, it's usually around 170,000, 180,000 people who access individual insurance through Connect for Health Colorado, which is our state-run marketplace. Over 70% of those individuals are receiving financial assistance that helps them afford their monthly premiums for insurance. On top of that, we also have over 400,000 Coloradans that are covered through expanded Medicaid coverage under the Affordable Care Act.
Now, aside from this particular lawsuit that's going to be hearing oral arguments on Tuesday in Texas, what are some of the other active threats right now to the ACA? Because this has been a political football now, certainly since Donald Trump's campaign. What are some of the other issues facing the ACA?
Right now, we're seeing a lot of proposed rule and regulatory changes that would roll back some of the protections of the Affordable Care Act. One of the more recent ones is rolling back some of the non-discrimination protections of the Affordable Care Act to essentially not protect individuals who are transgender or in LGBTQ in some cases. And also, it would roll back some additional requirements for insurance companies to be providing materials and communications in multiple languages and some of those kinds of things that really ensure that we can all access the health care that we need. So these are proposed rules coming through the Department of Health and Human Services or Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, and they're essentially trying to change the rules and guidelines of a variety of programs under the ACA that roll back some of the very necessary protections.
And is there continuing legislative efforts to strip the ACA as well?
We're not seeing the full-fledged legislative efforts to attack the Affordable Care Act like we saw during the repeal fight in 2017. What we are seeing actually are some progressive movement on some legislation that could actually help the Affordable Care Act in some tangential ways. I think some of it remains to be seen whether those proposals will make it through the Congress, but I think there's a lot of interest, at least from Democrats and some more moderate Republicans, in helping ensure that people are getting the information they need to enroll in health insurance, meaning providing funding for outreach and enrollment support. And that is, as we have found in Colorado, is really crucial to helping individuals access the health insurance that they need.
And I know that was a big component, that a lot of the federal funding for that type of outreach and education was stripped essentially from it. And so what's the impact then of that? You know, if people don't know, obviously, they can't enroll.
Right.
Are we seeing that reflected in the numbers?
The impact of that in Colorado is a little less direct because we have a state-run marketplace. And so our state marketplace has a lot more leeway in how they are allocating their dollars and things like that. But even so, they have had to spend less on outreach and marketing in recent years because they're having to be self-sustaining and maintain their operating costs and all of those things. But we know that that support is still very important. What we've actually seen in Colorado is a slight increase in the number of people who are enrolling through Connect for Health Colorado this last year, which really, again, sort of undermines the argument in this court case that the ACA can't function without the individual mandate penalty.
So in terms of this lawsuit, oral arguments are being heard in Texas on Tuesday. What will be the next steps in that case?
So I think we'll have to wait for the ruling after these oral arguments. That could take several weeks. That could take a couple months. So we don't entirely know what that timeline will look like, but I think regardless of the outcome of the case, it will likely be appealed by whichever side loses the case. And then this case would potentially be taken up by the Supreme Court.
Is there a concern that, aside from this case, which could have just a complete impact on the future of the Affordable Care Act, but these other issues that you identified earlier, these regulatory rollbacks, is there a concern that the ACA will be stripped of all its teeth at some point, that it just won't even be able to function anymore?
I don't think it will get that far. I think that there's only so much that they can modify through regulatory and rule changes, thankfully. But even so, those are substantial risks. I think it does make the Affordable Care Act a little less effective, and it then comes down a lot to what states are trying to do to bolster the Affordable Care Act in many cases, like we are here in Colorado, in a variety of ways, and making sure that those protections are, in as many cases possible, written into our own laws and statutes. So it's not going to undermine the Affordable Care Act completely at the federal level, and many of the protections cannot be affected through the regulatory and rule changes, but they can be undermined by expanding short-term health plans that don't really provide quality coverage and some of these alternative products that the Trump administration is really advocating for.
Adam Fox is with the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative. The state of Colorado is intervening as a defendant in this lawsuit that will hear oral arguments today in a Texas court in an effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act. It is 20 minutes past 8 o'clock. A big thank you to everyone who has been calling us this morning at 303-449-4885, including Gary in Lakewood, Julian in Lafayette, who always likes Democracy Now!, says Julian, and Alan Watts, coming up at 9 o'clock. And a big thank you to Edward, who called in from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So wherever you are listening to us now, we'd love to have your love expressed this morning to KGNU in our Summer of Love Fund Drive. It's as simple as calling us at 303-449-4885. And so many local businesses showing their love. A big thank you to the generous local Boulder businesses that have donated food to fuel our volunteers today. Thanks to Santo for breakfast, Chef Bob for donating lunch and savory cuisine, Catering for providing dinner. KGNU is a labour of love, and it does take a village to power our station. So please do thank those businesses for supporting your community radio station, KGNU. Well, starting tomorrow, the first ever Boulder Environmental Nature Outdoors Film Festival kicks off at the Dairy Arts Centre. It is the brainchild of Richard Paradise. He produces the Martha's Vineyard Environmental Film Festival. And he says the one in Boulder now will feature a variety of films as well as panel discussions and events all focused on the environment.
Well, the reason why I put into the title environmental, nature and outdoors is that I don't believe you can be an outdoorsman or woman and not be an environmentalist. Or I don't think if you have a great appreciation of nature and you want to be out in nature, you're actively involved in the outdoors. So, you know, it's like a convergence. Yes, there are some films in the festival that have more of an advocacy orientation, but then there's films that are more outdoorsy, more appreciation of nature. How I curate it is I look for films that are going to both be enlightening to the audience and also be entertaining and not just be a lot of sort of talking heads. So, for example, you have this movie, The River and the Wall, which is our opening night film. It starts off as a journey among five adventurers who want to travel down the 1,200-mile Rio Grande along the border of U.S. and Mexico border. And they want to look at this pristine area because most people don't know what the border's like. Most people think of the border as being, okay, Mexico here and U.S. here, flat, with some sort of line or something between the two countries. Well, not really. I mean, in the sort of Rio Grande River Delta, you've got curving borders, you've got natural waterways, you've got beautiful mountainous cliff areas. And they wanted to explore this before the so-called wall, hopefully that will never be built, but so-called wall is going to be built. They wanted to explore it. But as they do that, they're also coming across the environmental issues, the human issues of this proposed wall and how it will impact the outdoors and nature and wildlife and, of course, people. How people will be impacted, farmers, ranchers, you know, the people who actually live along the border, not us living up in the mountains or living on the East Coast, but really, how are the people going to be impacted? So there's a movie that has much more than just an environmental advocacy. It's more of a journey. It's more looking at all the aspects of a natural, pristine area and discovering it, I hope, for the first time. A lot of people, I think, probably haven't traveled, you know, along the Rio Grande River, haven't been along the border, and this will be eye-opening for them to really what's there.
Now, that particular film, it really is at the intersection of a lot of issues right now.
Yes.
Environmentalism, nature, also politics, and of course, immigration.
Exactly.
And it does seem that any conversation around environmentalism, even if it is not overtly advocacy, that is in and of itself political, just because of the world that we're living in right
exactly,
now.
Exactly. I mean, you have climate change issues. I mean, the film Into the Canyon, which again is a journey. I mean, it's funny. It's a lot of the films deal with people taking a journey for themselves and self-discovery, but also bringing other people, the viewer sitting in the theater along with them. Pete McBride, who's a very famed photographer, actually lives in Colorado. You know, Into the Canyon is his journey along the entire length of the Grand Canyon, 720 miles with his friend. But in the concept of doing that trip, I mean, they learn about all the pressure and overdevelopment that's happening along the canyon, along the walls, and climate change and that impact on the Grand Canyon, lower water, for instance, the scarcity of water coming into the canyon and down the river. So all these films, like you said, have multiple layers. And as a viewer, you take what you want from it. Maybe you learn something new. And then what I like to do is pair movies with speakers and have the speakers relate, comment, answer questions afterwards. So there's a conversation. People don't leave the theater just, okay, they have their own thoughts, but by having a conversation with the audience led by speakers on the stage, you have a much broader conversation, and I think really just enhances the experience. And I think that's what all film festivals really try to accomplish. They try to bring a conversation together of people from different walks of life to comment on a film and the themes of that film.
What are some of the other films that people can expect?
Well, some of the other films, I mentioned the opening night film. The closing night film is quite interesting. It's the only narrative feature in the festival. All the other films are documentaries. The closing night film is called Woman at War, and it's actually an Icelandic film, and it envisions this woman who is an environmental advocate, activist, to the point where she is actually sabotaging an electrical plant because it's supplying electricity to an aluminum smelting plant, and she doesn't feel that the government is treating the environment fairer by encouraging this large-scale industrial operation. So she takes it upon herself. But it's more than that. I mean, it's a film also that I felt shows what an activist has to do to balance their family life and like maybe their work life with being passionate about an activist, their activism. And how do you balance that? You know, if you're a gung-ho, activist and you're really putting your beliefs on the line, how can you have a normal family life? Can you have a job? And so it's a very interesting film. It also has very droll comedy, if you like Scandinavian type comedy, very droll. It's a marvelous film, but it brings up that subject of activism. Not that I'm advocating that someone should go out and sabotage, a electrical plant, but it does bring up these issues. That's one of them. We have this great ocean film called Simply Blue, and that plays on Thursday, and we're teaming up, collaborating with Ocean First Institute, which is a Boulder-based organization. We were able to team up with a lot of local organizations, the Nature's Conservancy of Colorado, the Colorado Renewable Energy Society. We've tried to partner with a lot of local groups, other nonprofits that already have expertise, already have built-in communities here in Boulder to help add and enhance the film experience.
That is Richard Paradise, who is the founder of the Boulder Environmental Nature Outdoors Film Festival. And that starts tomorrow and it runs through July 13th. And it all happens at the Dairy Arts Centre in Boulder. And you can find out more online at boulderenoff.org. It's environmental and Outdoors Film Festival, boulderenoff.org. It is 29 minutes past 8 o'clock. Time now for the comment line.
This is a comment to just remark upon the extraordinary KGNU programming on today, which is July 3rd. The mini pledge drive coming up will be, I hope, enormously successful. Where else are you going to get this amazing stuff like KGNU's coverage of local issues after Democracy Now, and then climate coverage, Hightower, Brigitte Mars, and Waldman? Thanks, Joe. What an amazing day it has been already, and it's not all that unique. It's particularly juicy today, but wow, how can anybody do without KGNU? This is John Wiener. Thanks to all.
And a big thank you to John for your comment on the comment line and your ongoing support as a listener member. And we invite you to join John and share your love for KGNU in our Summer of Love Fund Drive. KGNU is a labour of love. All the countless hours put in by volunteers and members of the community doing it because of their love for community. So we'd love to have you on board this morning with a call at 303-449-4885 kgnu.org, and thank you.